really a joy to be here with you all tonight because, like you, I come in every week and I sit out here and I hear the messages and I try to incorporate them into my life. And I hear one after another, and every few weeks I'll think, now what did we just cover? And so when it comes to an opportunity to kind of back up and look at an entire series that we've been in and what did we learn from it, then that's really exciting to me because that's how I learn. And so tonight I'm looking forward to being able to do that. I'm glad that the cage is gone and the red lights are gone. And tonight's more a message of hope and being free from these viruses. Now, if you're new today with us, as we move forward, the thing that I would ask you to do is understand that I'm kind of recapping an entire series here. And so feel free to grab a CD or a set of tapes about the series that we've been through because I'm going to build on some of those things. And at times it might feel like I go a little intense, but it's building on the things that have been taught. So as we get started, will you all join me in prayer? Lord, thanks for the chance to be here together and to learn about you and grow. I pray that you use my words, just as your words, to teach all of us. And we thank you for this time. We thank you for this beautiful day and just for the joy of being here together learning. In your son's name we pray. Amen. Well, I took a class, gosh, years and years ago. I actually counted about 15 years ago. And the instructor told this story. He said there was a guy out in a field, and he was working the land, and he had a hoe, and he was just working away. And another guy came up to him, and he said, Joe, put that down and follow me. And so Joe did, and they went down to the local courthouse. And at the courthouse, the man went inside, and he came out, and he handed Joe some paperwork. And he said, Joe, you are now free. I don't own you anymore. He said, because of the Emancipation Proclamation, you can go and you can be free to do anything that you desire to do or be. And Joe took the paperwork and he put it in his pocket and he went back to the field and he picked up his hoe and he went back to work. And the instructor said to us, he said, now is at that point, is Joe free or is Joe still a slave? And I think that that question has kind of haunted me all these years because of how it relates to me personally. Because what the instructor was trying to get us to see is that we have an opportunity to live a life that's full of grace and free from the viruses that plague us and free to be out of slavery. And yet we constantly and consistently go back to the viruses and we pick them up and we go back to work on them over and over. And I see that in this series that we've just done with viruses, especially in my own life. In fact, in getting ready to share with you all tonight, it really hit me, someone mentioned it to me, and that I needed to share with you all probably my most least flattering moment of the entire year. And I'm just going to sit down because every time I start talking about this, I get sick again. I have shared with you all over time that if you've been here for a while, that I have struggled with depression since probably like puberty. And the last number of years, I've been free of that, but it took a lot of relearning some things and learning new behavior in my own life. And one of those things was to learn to discipline my life to be celebratory, so to have the discipline of celebration. And to do that just took some rewiring in my head to not let myself go down a path of being disappointed by something, but to go out and actually pursue and look for things to celebrate. And now I do that probably without thinking because I just go on God hunts every day. And so I do things like when there's fresh sheets on the bed, I call it clean sheet day because I love getting into clean sheets. I love getting home at the end of the day and my dog is greeting me and being glad to see me no matter how my day went. I love the smell of fresh cut grass. And one of the things that I've incorporated into my life is that every spring I love to go to a plant nursery and pick out plants and take them home and dig in the dirt and plant them and water them and watch them grow. And that's just one of the things that I love to do because I love how God created all these colors and different types of flowers. Well, last year I shared with you all that I had spinal fusion surgery and was in a hospital bed last spring for 3 months. And so there was no shopping for flowers in that whole thing. I got a lot, but I didn't go shopping for any. And so this year I was especially looking forward to going to a nursery and getting plants. The problem is that spring just kind of always rolls around, and it just happened to roll around at the time that the bigger thing was going on in the world called the Crazy Campaign. And I was in charge of the overall package of the Crazy Campaign. And I know that it was supposed to be this big faith journey for all of us, but I will be honest with you all that it was a stress journey for me. It was a lot of details and a lot of extra work, and it was awesome. And I don't mean to take away from that, but I mean, there were nights when, you know, I hadn't even married a year, and my husband's sound asleep in bed, and I'm working on my computer by the light of the screen. And so when it came to having time to go to my favorite nursery across town, spending a chunk of a day planning, I just did not have time to do it. So there was already kind of this subtle thing of disappointment in me. And so I said to my husband, I said, you know, what if right after church we run over to Myers and just in their nursery pick out some plants and I can at least plant a couple flower boxes? And he, you know, sure, fine, whatever. And so we get to church that day. It's in the midst of the crazy campaign. And what was happening that day was it was the day that we gave out $60,000 in small bills. So that it was to teach us that God, money is just a tool of God's. And so just keep giving it. And we were all charged to go out and give our money away. And we've still seen amazing stories of how that happened. But Brian Towne, our senior pastor, had this wonderful idea to actually find somebody to bake the money into fortune cookies. And so that's just a little extra stress on top of the whole campaign. And when I get here that morning, the person was short a couple of thousand fortune cookies. And his whole message was around fortune cookies. And so we were stuffing dollars into envelopes to hand out, and it worked out fine, but it was just, you know, not what I wanted to do on Flower Day. And so my husband and I go rolling over to Myers, and we spent about an hour kind of digging through, me trying to find the flowers that I really wanted. And finally, the selection just wasn't there. It was fine. Picked them out, asked the growth cashier, will you watch these? Well, we grab some groceries, we'll be right back. We get back, and a chunk of them are gone. It was the final straw in my world. Yes, it was. And I looked at the girl behind the cashier at cash register, and I said, where are my flowers? You said you'd watch them. Or somebody, you know, the other girl said that she'd watch them. And she said, well, nobody was here at the registry when I got here. And, you know, I'm sorry, but I didn't know they were yours. And I said, but she said, we had this whole conversation, and she said that she would watch them. And she said, look, ma'am, I'm sorry, but I didn't know. And about that time, I looked down on the other side of the register, and the rest of my flowers are right there. Now, I'd spent an hour picking these things out. I knew them all by name at this point. And I said, oh, never mind, they're right here. Well, this woman right in front of us says, no, those are mine. And I said in my politest voice ever, yeah, but you got them from right here, and that's my pile. And she said to the girl at the register, you know, I asked if they were anybody's, and you said no. And at this point, the girl at the register, you know, she's all of 17, and her eyes are about this big, staring at me, having, you know, my nervous breakdown in the middle of Myers over the stupid flowers. And she said, I didn't know they were yours, and I told her she could have them. And I looked at my husband. I said, you know what, let's just leave. And the girl behind the register's like, you know, well, you can pick out more. I said, I don't want to pick out more. And she said, look, I'll go pick them out for you. I'll get you some more. And I'm watching my flowers be scanned, you know. I'm like, I don't want any more. I wanted that one, and I wanted that one. And she said, you know, I will go pick out more for you. And I said, you know what? I said, those were the only four purple petunias in that color in the whole place. I don't want any more. And this woman at this point who's bought them picks them up out of her cart, and she walks over to me and very nicely says to me, she goes, you know what, these are not that important to me, and obviously they're very important to you. She said, why don't you have them? And I just, it was, you know, that moment where all of a sudden you kind of have that out-of-body experience and you realize what you're doing. And I said to her, I'm so sorry. I'm just disappointed. It just isn't going my way today. And I thank you. That's very kind of you, but it's okay. And, you know, I'm just thinking, please let the earth swallow me at this moment. And she said, no, I insist. Please have these. And the girl behind the cashier, she says, you know what, ma'am? You've already paid for them. And the woman says to me, she goes, you know what? I got $10 at church today. I still feel sick. So y'all are laughing. I'm still not. And so I start backpedaling, and I just, I mean, I'm like, I'm sure that that's probably not what that money was for. And I think that you ought to just keep those. I'm really sorry. And she, in her nice, I mean, she was so nice about it. And she said, you know what, and I know who you are. Yeah. So there's just a little glimpse into my virus. Who's next? But you know what? That is what a virus does to you. You know, it is. It was in me, and it was in my head that it ought to go my way, and it ought to be my way, and I'm already sacrificing, and by goodness, you better give me those petunias, and they weren't rape petunias anyway, and there are only four of them, and I have five flower boxes, and I mean, it, you know, just all that stuff in you. And so mine just happened to be, you know, ugliest moment of the year in public. So if you're that woman, I apologize again. And so, you know, as we kind of sit here today and we look at these viruses that we've covered, fear, greed, negativity, racism, disappointment, you know, I'm learning just like you guys about all of these. And so in looking at this message today, you know, the question that really ran through my head was just kind of a, what is a virus? And I had a real telling moment of a lesson in what a virus is. And I have just gotten back last week from South Africa. I went with the team over to Titus Sotole's church to do the pre-work for the AIDS Hospice Center that we've all been raising the money to do through the Crazy Campaign. And while we were there, we met with the head of the AIDS Counseling Center over there. And she and her team took us through kind of a crash course in what AIDS is. And I thought I knew, but I know. And basically, the HIV virus is transmitted through the exchange of any bodily fluids. And you can get the virus, and it can live in your body from anywhere from 3 to 6 months before any test will ever show that you have it. It's sneaky. It just lives in you. And you can be infecting other things, you can be going along your life, but it's in there. But you can't find out if you have it or not. Doesn't that sound like a virus of greed? And so then what happens when you find out that you're HIV positive, they know somebody who's lived over 20 years, HIV positive, with no symptoms. And so finally, whenever HIV decides to show itself, it shows itself through AIDS. And AIDS essentially attacks, it's anything that can come against your immune system. And so any disease that is an immune disorder, you know, most of the people over there don't want to say that they have AIDS because it's such a social stigma. They say they have tuberculosis, dementia, body aches, anything that's an immune disorder. And wow, isn't that a virus? I mean, you know, I sat there listening to them and I'm thinking, I don't have AIDS, I don't think, but I don't have, I mean, I have similar things to that. And so we left that session to go visit AIDS patients. And, wow, it was amazing. One of the biggest things for me in going over there was just, I was really excited. Do y'all remember if you were here going through the campaign and Titus introduced us to Hope, the real pretty woman with the little girl? I think we have a picture of her, maybe it'll pop up in a minute, but just beautiful girl. And the last news that we'd gotten was she was doing really well, and we were very excited about it. There she is. Looks very similar to Sting, don't you think? And so I was so excited, you guys, that I was going to get to meet Hope. And she died 2 days, they had her funeral 2 days before I got there. I didn't get to. And so the first place we went was to pay our condolences to Hope's mother. That was hard. And we left there walking with the AIDS counselors and our team of people who were there down around the corner in Shantytown to go and visit Hope's best friend, Lindy Way. And we walk into this home, and it's just a tiny place. And they don't have medicine. They don't have adult diapers. There's a smell. There's a sense of it's just hard. And we go in and we meet Lindy Way, and she's beautiful. She, you know, same age as Hope. They were so close, apparently. And she's wailing. I mean, she's in so much physical pain, and she is just wailing. And, you know, you're standing there like, what do you do? And so we asked her, how can we pray for you? And the interpreter says to us, she says, could we help her with food? The family didn't have anything to eat yesterday. And could we provide them with some food? We had some, and we had taken about a three-month supply to each of the places that we visited. But we left there after we visited her, and we visited several other people, and I wish I had a prettier tale to tell you about all of them. But we got in the van to drive back, and Peggy, who's the head of the counseling center, we'll have to show you a picture at some point. We called her Mama Peggy. She was a Mama Peggy. And she said, Cindy, how are you doing? And, you know, I think I'm still kind of surprised about my response. I don't know where it came from, just in the heat of the moment, there it lay. And I said, you know what? I'm really okay. I mean, I've been in the places where I've worked with people dying and, you know, changed the diapers on the elderly and all, and I get this, and it's hard. I said, but you know what strikes me about this is that this is no different than I deal with and the people here at Crossroads deal with. And she said, really, tell me about that. And I said, you know, I watch people and have seen in my own life in dealing with different, you know, I've struggled with eating and things, that the virus gets a hold of us. And it just starts eating away at us, whether it's alcoholism or spending or fear or whatever thing that you know you have kind of lying dormant in you, that's AIDS. And yet with Lindy Way, we see it and it's very obvious. You know, I mean, she's dying from it. It's a physical death. But for us in America, I really think that sometimes we're dying a spiritual death. And it's the same exact thing. And I was just struck by that because, frankly, I was kind of surprised that that was my reaction. But I think having been a pastor for so many years now, I've seen this, and I've seen people who are stuck. They have this freedom, and we know that we can experience who God is, and we know that we have this freedom, and yet we go right back to whatever our hoe is, and we pick it up, and we let that disappointment of I want it my way weed into our lives, and we don't deal with it. And that was the thing that really struck me about being there, was it's no different. It's just not. And so I came home, and I knew I had this message, because frankly, y'all got me because everybody else is out of town. And I'm thinking, ugh, anything but on stage. And I had missed a number of the series this summer, and so I sat down to watch all of them, kind of back to back. And as I did that, one of the things that struck me about it was this habit of we come and we hear about what's going on in you know, the dark recesses of our virus lives, and we get kind of an anecdote and a challenge to that, but then we come back and we do it the next week. And as I sat there just trying to think, I don't have anything to say, God. Why did you ask me to do this one? I looked down on our coffee table, and there was this little book sitting there. And it's called The Gentle Art of a Servant's Heart by Charles Swindoll. And it was a wedding gift to us by some friends. And it's just an awesome little wedding gift. And as I sat there, I just felt this overwhelming urge to pick it up and re-look at it. And I was like, okay, I don't have anything to say, so I might as well pick up that book and look at it. And I did, and I it was just funny because essentially what this is, the Old Testament of the Bible is all about who God is and the foretelling of a Messiah that's going to come. The New Testament of the Bible is all about Jesus coming as the Messiah, his death, and then how the church was formed and people grew through the teaching of Jesus. And so in this book, it recaps what we call the Sermon on the Mount, and it's basically a sermon that Jesus did standing on a mount. And that's why it's called that way, called that. But you have to kind of understand that what happened here was that Jesus people thought he was going to come and he was going to be this mighty warrior and he was going to create an uprising and they were going to go to battle and they were going to fight back for all the wrongs that had been done to, you know, the people. And so Jesus came and he traveled around and he healed people and met with people. But the Sermon on the Mount is really the first time ever that he did a public teaching. And so Jesus is cruising along, and literally, I mean, thousands of people are following him around because they're just ready for whatever, you know, this bated breath. What are you going to teach me? What are you going to teach me? And so as I picked this up and I thought through, okay, these were Jesus' first teaching. What in the world does it have to do, God? And you know, okay, I'm game. The very first one says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And I thought, okay, what is poor in spirit? Well, poor in spirit is essentially dying to your own will and letting your spirit be poor so that you are willing to experience who God is. That you're looking with anticipation to what God's spirit is so that you can experience the joy and freedom of who God is. And I thought, well, that's interesting because that's kind of a perfect antidote for fear. If we're always looking for God's best, then what is there to be fearful of? So I thought, well, I'll bite. What's the next one? "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." And here they call this the compassion one. Because if we all are going out and we're looking to be compassionate to people, if we're thinking through what is it that this person is experiencing, what are they sad about, how can I be compassionate to them, how do we have time to be negative, how can we be critical if what we're doing is we're looking at people in terms of how can we care for them and be compassionate to them. So at this point, I'm kind of laughing. I'm thinking, God, your sense of humor is big. You know, you wrote this 2,000 years ago, and it's fitting in exactly with what's going on with these viruses. And so the next one is, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." And they talk in here about meek being gentleness. And Charles Swindoll says, "Gentleness includes such enviable qualities as having strength under control, being calm and peaceful when surrounded by a heated atmosphere." We'll just say purple petunias. So what's the next one? "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled." And on this one, Charles Swindoll says, "Righteousness includes righteousness being seeking after God, wanting the right thing in terms of a right relationship with God and right actions." And it says, "Righteousness includes not just looking upward, pursuing a vertical holiness, but also looking around and being grieved over the corruption, the inequities, the lack of integrity, the moral compromises that abound." Racism. Racism. If we're looking around and we're willing to be aware of the inequities. In South Africa, when we went out to dinner with Titus and his family and his friends, people would put, I mean, you could hear the forks clank. They could not believe a white family and a black, or a white group and a black family would be eating together in public. Children would stop and point at us. We in America have gotten kind of dulled out to this. We have an opportunity to not put up with the corruption. You know, part of the problem or part of the solution. So I just went on through this. I mean, over and over, they're there. "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." What does it mean to be pure? I'll just challenge you guys. You know, the Bible's there for us to learn from it. And you don't have to come here every weekend to learn how to cure a virus. We give away free Bibles out at the Information Center every week. And so take them, you know. Go look up in Matthew, the book of Matthew in the New Testament, and go through here and be curious like I was. And you'll enjoy God's sense of humor and how he's still saying the same things to us. And it's still the same viruses that we're dealing with. And it's out of that curiosity that I think it unites us and it brings us all here. It puts us in this, I mean, every one of us here tonight, we're here because we're curious. You might not believe in God. You might believe in God. You might be sold out and excited about God. But you know what? What got you here was a curiosity. And that's the ticket. You know, it would be a shame for me just to stand up here and throw at you a couple more Bible verses out of the Bible that help you fight this thing that, you know, are the viruses that get us. The image that's in my mind is, you know, I went to Iron tonight. You can't tell, but I really did. And I went to plug in my iron, and I'm used to that plug providing me electricity, but that plug is just a conduit because the source is way before that plug ever came along. And that's kind of how the Bible is. The Bible there is as the source to get us to what is it's the conduit to get us to the source of who God is. And God is big. And if we'll all join in together a curiosity about God, where will it land us? I had a conversation about South Africa with somebody. And he said to me, you know, gosh, the pressure of this, because if we don't, we're trying to incubate some businesses because the unemployment over there is 60% in their township. It's really amazing. And he said, you know, you're incubating the businesses and you're getting the AIDS Hospice Mortuary Center going, and failure is not an option. I'm sure you feel that pressure. I said, you know what? I don't mean to, you know, come back at you, but failure is an option. I mean, it's all God's. It's just plain old all God's. And failure on these things are an option, but failure on the bigger picture, that's different. I said, we're partnering with Charity, which is their short name for what they call their church. Crossroads is partnering with Charity because we have the same purpose. And that is to come together and offer people an eternal hope in God. Not just a verse to make you feel better about the virus you've got, but the big umbrella picture of eternal hope in God. And I said, you know what, we're going over there to partner with Charity because out of that eternal hope with God, we want to minister to these people, but you know what, they're ministering to us just as well. We learned more about worship and faith and prayer when we were over there. I mean, they had a lot to teach us. And I said, you know, so failure on the actual outcome of this, in this world, that could happen. God could have other plans. But the eternal hope in the partnership, that's a whole different ballgame. And I could tell he was aggravated. I mean, he was just like, how can you say this? How can you say this? These people have nothing. You have to provide for their needs here while they're here. And I mean, this is not an option. And I just kind of thought, be curious. And I said, you know what? You're teaching me. I am hearing you because you're right. Failure isn't an option. And you know why I know that? Because God has already conquered. God's already conquered. He already won. He's already succeeded. Because we have the ability, because of a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, of eternal hope, and that will never be taken away from us. And you're right. Failure is not an option. Because we have that eternal hope. And I could go on with this conversation. We're on great terms. I mean, we're friends and we're still having that conversation. But I loved that conversation because we were both curious about what the other one thought and believed. And we were willing to be brave enough to go down the path of having that conversation. And I think that's the significant thing for all of us, is to be able to say, you know what? I'm not just going to stay where I am. I'm going to keep on this journey of exploring who God is. And so in doing that, and using the Bible to help teach us, this hope comes about. As I shared with you, going over there, I was really, really sad by this woman Hope's life. And I know that, you know, Titus had shared with all of us, she had such a hope in God. And 2 weeks before I left, we lost my husband's brother to a brain tumor. He'd struggled with it for about 5 years. And it occurred to me that Mark, who had this huge hope in God, you guys, he got to meet Hope before I did. They died very similar deaths. Mark's brain tumor was inoperable. At the end of his life, he couldn't feed himself. He couldn't roll over. He had a hard time talking. And finally what happened was he had a reaction to a drug that burnt the skin off of his body. And it was very similar to how Hope died, through the sores that are the final stages of AIDS. But the two of them had something big. Mark was one of the most inspirational lives that I've known. He had a hope in God that was big. I mean, it was huge. At his funeral, people would just, I mean, there was a time when people would just kind of spontaneously stand up and they'd say, "You don't know me, but," and these stories would just come out. I mean, there were 1,000 people there. And they'd say, "I met Mark in the waiting room at a doctor's office, and he started asking me, how was I doing, and did I need rides to get where, you know, to my appointments, and how were the doctors treating me? And I finally said, you know, who are you waiting on here?" And he laughed, and he said, "I'm not waiting on anybody. I got an inoperable brain tumor. I'm here as a patient." And the next person stood up and told the story that when she was 8.5 months pregnant with her 4th child, she was going to a meeting where people of the Jewish faith were meeting with people of the Christian faith for reconciliation, because there's always kind of this antagonistic thing between the two. And they were at this, she showed up at this meeting with her husband, and they walk in, and the first person she happens to meet is Mark. And she says to him, "Excuse me, do you have any aspirin? My husband has a horrible headache." And she said, "Within an hour, my husband was dead of a brain aneurysm." And she said, "Mark and Julie have never left my side in 13 and a half years." See, Mark was a neurologist. He diagnosed his own brain tumor. He knew. He did this for a living, you guys. He knew how much time he had left. He knew. He knew it was inoperable. He knew when the radiation wouldn't work anymore. He would tell us. And yet the next person would stand up and they'd say, "When my insurance ran out," or "when my cousin's," or whomever they were speaking for's insurance ran out from a brain injury, a head injury, "Mark made house calls to us for years. And on his own dime, without the fear of insurance, he came and called on us. But he didn't just minister to us from a physical standpoint. It was always a spiritual standpoint. He brought him, you know, this person music. And Mark and Julie, they ran their lives so that they would have the finances. Mark would buy used instruments. And he would go teach these people how to play because he felt like music was just good for the soul. He'd tell them about God. He'd take them to their appointments. He would meet their families. I am so inspired by this man's life. He lived such a life of hope. That tumor never got him. Because he knew where he was going. He just knew. And that's the thing for all of us with this virus. How many times do I go back and I pick up that hoe and I live in that place again? When what I really have the opportunity to do is live a life of freedom in God, to stay curious about Him, to go on a God hunt every day. At the end of each of these aisles, there's a prescription, there's a notepad that we're using as a prescription pad. And I'd ask if you just pull off a page and let it just go down the aisle. Because what I want to challenge us to do is to not continue to live in this place that we're in. You know, what is the thing that if we knew in our heads, in our hearts, that if we responded to God, it might be walking away from alcoholism and making that commitment to do it. It can be walking away from overeating. It can be an eating disorder. It can be overspending. It can be living a life of fear and not trying to get a cure for that and get help for it. You know, I've been challenged. I've been writing in this little journal that I just kind of keep with me. And I have been doing my prescription pad. And I'm amazed at the things that I have the opportunity to work on in my life. I'm amazed at the freedom when I start putting that in, that incorporating that into my life, the freedom that I have to change who I am in response to the hope that God gives us that's an eternal hope. And it's one that doesn't bind us in viruses. And so my big thing for today for all of us is just to take a minute and just think through, okay, I want to just sit in church every week. I want to think about what's the thing that'll change my life. You might draw a picture. You might write an anecdote, a prescription for that thing. But God's a God who heals. He came so that we would be healed and we would be whole. So I just offer up that time to be able to do this. Yeah. At Mark's funeral, my husband and his brother stood together to do the eulogy. And Dave said, he goes, I never knew Mark got that much stuff done. And we laughed because Mark would have just gotten a kick out of that. And you know what? We walk, you guys. If we're not intentional the way Mark was about his life, Mark was intentional. He knew what his life was about. And if we aren't intentional, if we're not saying, you know what, I want to walk. I want to walk away from this addiction. I want to walk away from this fear. I want to walk away from this pain. I want to walk away from this lack of forgiveness that's binding my life. And I want to walk towards God's love and His forgiveness and His grace and His hope and be curious about Him. There's no such thing as just standing still. Standing still takes energy. And by not walking this way, we're walking this way. And this year, the experiences that God's brought my way, it's challenged me. Am I going to be intentional? Am I going to get serious about what I'm writing on this paper and what I'm changing in my life? And I'm just like you guys. I sit out here every week and I learn and I hope I'm growing and changing. But my goodness, if I'm not intentional about it, shame on me for not putting down that hoe and living a life of freedom. So I just pray that all of us do it together, that we're curious together, that we find other people to be curious with, and that we just walk in the right direction. I'm going to invite you all to stand. If you're in that place, they're going to sing this song about God of Wonders. And so I just invite you to join in. You know, God is a God of wonders. And I just thank you for your time to share with you all tonight.
God, I just want to be on this journey after you. I don't want to stop at any point. You're so wonderful and you're so huge that my whole life will contain this journey of following after you. So I want to say that again to you. I want to be a man who's after you, who's coming after you. Thank you that you want to heal us. You want to make right everything that's been wrong. Thank you. Amen. Well, thanks for being here. We hope to see you Wednesday night with Tony Campolo at Next Level.